Part 3. A Song in the Dark. Chapter 15. Beacon in the Night. The people remained as they were, lingering in their underground storm shelters. The few that stayed above ground crouched in hiding, or set up street-end barricades, ready to defend their territory with iron bars, tools, pylon spears, and limited numbers of small arms. They were the first to die when the Night Lords returned. Their bodies were the first cast into the skinning pits. Servitor excavation teams pulled up entire sections of streets, digging ever-expanding holes to pile the skinless dead. Floating servo skulls and the Night Lords' own helm feeds recorded the carnage, archiving it for later use. The Archregent never left his desk. Dawn, as weak as it was on this world, was only an hour away. With the attackers returned, he intended to get some answers, one way or another. If today would see him die, he wouldn't go in ignorance. Abetor Muvo hurried into the chamber, his shaking hands clutching printed reports as his robe swished across the sooty floor. No servants remained above ground to sweep the debris away.
"The militia is practically gone," he said. "The Vox is... there's no reason to listen to it anymore. It's just screaming, sire."
The Archregent nodded.
"Stay with me, Muvo. All will be well."
"How can you say that?"
"A bad habit," the older man confessed. "All will not be well, but we can face it with dignity, nevertheless. I believe I hear gunfire on the decks below."
Muvo crossed to the desk.
I hear it too. Where are your guards?"
The Archregent took his seat, steepling his fingers.
"I sent them to the closest shelter hours ago. Though they did seem likely to remain out of some admirably foolish desire to do their duty. Perhaps that is them deeper in the ship, selling their lives to delay this meeting by a handful of seconds. I hope it's not them, though. That would be quite a waste."
The abettor gave him a sideways glance.
"If you say so, Lord."
"Stand straight, Muvo. We are about to have guests."
First Claw walked into the chamber, their armor still decorated in the blood of the tower's defenders. Talos led them in, immediately dropping a red helm onto the Archregent's desk. It sent cracks through the wood.
"This desk is an heirloom,"
the old man stated with admirable calm. The Archregent's hands didn't even tremble as he leaned back in his chair. Talos liked him immediately. Not that it would affect the Legion's actions one iota.
"I take it," the statesman continued, "that this is the helmet of an Imperial Space Marine belonging to the Genesis chapter."
"You presume correctly,"
came the warrior's voice, in a snarl of brutal vox.
"Your defenders came to interfere with our plans for this world. It was the last mistake they ever made."
The warrior turned away, walking around the observation dome, staring out over the city stretching in every direction. He finally looked back at the Archregent, the skull helm staring without remorse, but curiously without the hot-blooded shadow of malice. It was a cold, hollow visage, betraying nothing of the thoughts of the creature wearing it. The Archregent sat straighter and cleared his throat.
"I am Jiris Urumal, Archregent of Darkana."
Talos tilted his head.
"Darkana," he said without inflection. "The world had no imperial designation. Darkana was the name of the first ship from our fleet to land here. This world is called Sagwalsa. You, old man, are Archregent of a lie. Sagwalsa had a king once. His throne stands empty at the heart of a forgotten fortress, and he needs no regent."
The prophet looked back across the city, listening to the music within both mortals' heartbeats. Both were accelerating now, the wet drum tempo increasing in speed, and the salty tang of fear sweat was beginning to reach his senses. Humanity always smelled its sourest when afraid.
"I will tell you why the Imperium has never come for you," Talos said at length. "It is the same reason this world bore no name in Imperial record. Sagwalsa once sheltered a legion of arch-heretics in the years after a war now lost to legend. The Imperium wishes only to forget about this world and all those who walked upon it."
He turned back to the Archregent.
"That includes you, Jiras. You are tainted by association."
The Archregent looked at each of them in turn, the skull trophies and ornate weapons, their red eye lenses and thrumming battle armor powered by the bulky backpack generators.
"And what is your name?" he asked,
amazed that his voice didn't strangle in the tightness of his throat.
"Talos," the towering warrior's vox voice growled. "My name is Talos of the 8th Legion, master of the warship Echo of Damnation."
"And what do you hope to accomplish here, Talos?"
"I will bring the Imperium to this world. I will drag them back to the world they so ardently wish to forget.
We have been awaiting Imperial rescue for 4 centuries. They don't hear us."
The Night Lord shook his head, making the servos in his damaged armor buzz.
"Of course they hear you. They merely choose not to answer. We are too far from the Astronomican for them to risk travel." "Enough excuses. I have told you why they abandoned you here."
Talos breathed slowly, weighing his next words with care.
"They will answer this time. I will make sure of that. Do you have an astropathic consortium in this husk of a society?"
Guild? Yes, of course."
"And other psychically gifted souls?"
"Only those within the guild."
"You cannot lie to me. When you lie, your body betrays you in 1,000 subtle signals. Each of those signs is a clarion call to me. What are you seeking to hide?"
"There is mutation, at times, among the psychic. The guild deals with them."
"Very well. Bring this guild to me, now."
The Archregent made no attempt to move.
"Will you let us live?"
the old man asked.
"That depends. How many draw breath upon this world?"
"Our last census collated 10 million, across 7 settlements. Life is unkind to us here."
"Life is unkind everywhere. The galaxy has no love for any of us. I will let some of you live, to eke out an existence in the ruins while you wait for the Imperium. If none survived, there would be no one to speak of what they saw. Perhaps 1 in every 1,000 will live to greet the Imperium's arrival. It is not necessary, but it will be amusingly dramatic."
How can you speak of such dest?"
Talos cleared his throat. Through his helm's vocalizer, it sounded like a tank changing gears.
"I am bored of this conversation, Archregent. Comply with my wishes, and you may still be one of those who survives the night."
The old man rose to his feet.
"No."
"It is a fine thing to see a man with a backbone. I admire that. I respect it. But dubious courage has no place here, now, in this moment. I shall show you why."
Sirion stepped forward, his hand closing with a fistful of the abettor's lank hair. The man cried out as his boots left the floor.
"Please,"
the man stammered. Sirion drew his gladius, drawing it in a workmanlike carve along the abettor's belly. Blood gushed in a torrent, while looping innards threatened to spill out, held inside the body by nothing more than the man's own fingers. His pleading immediately warped into worthless screaming.
"This," the prophet said to the archregent, "is happening right now, across the stain of wreckage you call a city. This is what we are doing to your people."
Sirion, still holding the abettor aloft by his greasy hair, shook the man in his grip. More screaming, now punctuated by the wet slops of reeking intestinal meat slapping onto the decking.
"Do you see?"
Talos's eyes never left the archregent.
"You fled to the shelters, trapping yourselves with nowhere to run. Now, we will find all of you, and my brothers and I will do as we always do with those who flee like verminous prey."
He reached for the man in Sirion's grip, taking the convulsing, still living figure in an iron hold around the throat. Without ceremony, he dumped the bleeding body on the archregent's desk.
"Comply with me, and 1 in 1,000 of your people will avoid this fate. You will be one of them. Defy me, and not only will I no longer spare any of the others, you yourself will die now. My brothers and I will skin you while you still live. We are masters of prolonging the experience, so the prey only dies in the hours after the surgery is performed. Once a woman lived for 6 nights, wailing throughout the hours of crippling agony, only dying at last from infection in her filthy cell."
"Your finest work,"
Sirion mused aloud. The old man swallowed, trembling now.
"Your threats mean nothing to me."
The Night Lord pressed his gauntleted fingers to the archregent's face, cold ceramite fingertips following the contours of the weathered skin and fragile bone beneath.
"No. The human body does wondrous things when its mind feels fear. It becomes an avatar of the pressure within a single paradox, to fight or to flee. Your breath sours from the chemicals at work in your system. The clenching of internal musculature affects digestion, reflexes, and the ability to concentrate on anything but the threat. Meanwhile, the heart's wet rhythm becomes a war drum, beating blood for your muscles to use in order to escape harm. Your sweat smells different, muskier, like an animal trembling in terror, hopelessly marking its territory one last time. The edges of your eyes quiver, answering hidden signals from the brain, caught between wanting to stare to see the source of your fear, or to seal shut, hiding your vision from having to see what threatens you."
Talos clutched the back of the archregent's head, his skulled faceplate centimeters from the old man's face.
"I can sense all of that on you. I see it in every twitch of your soft, soft skin. I smell it peeling off your body in a thick stink. Do not lie to me, human. My threats mean everything to you."
"What?" The archregent had to swallow again. "What do you want?"
"I have already told you what I want. Bring me your astropaths."
As they waited, the archregent watched his city die. The enemy lord, the one naming himself Talos, stood by the edge of the observation dome, in constant communication with his brethren across sanctuary. His voice was a low, feral murmur, updating squads on each other's positions and mapping their progress. Every few minutes he would fall silent for a time and simply watch the fires spread. One of the other warriors, the one with the bulky, heavy bolter slung on his back, activated a handheld hololithic emitter. He altered the scene it displayed each time Talos ordered him to focus upon the picked feeds from a different squad. Abetor Muvo had fallen silent. The Archregent had closed his friend's eyes, choking on the smell rising from the split corpse.
"You get used to it,"
one of the warriors had said with a black laugh. The Archregent watched the hololithic feed, seeing Sanctuary's death playing out clearly enough, despite the visual distortion. The armored warriors projected before him, silent in their hololithic incarnation, tore through shelter bulkheads and ripped through the huddled masses within. He watched them drag men, women, and children by the hair out into the street, to be skinned and carried away by servitors, or crucified on the side of buildings, to mark that the closest shelter had been raided and cleaned out of all life. He saw the bodies hauled into the skinning pits, great mounds of flayed corpses stacked higher and higher, monuments of raw flesh, in honor of nothing more than suffering and pain.
"Why?"
he whispered, without realizing he'd spoken aloud. Talos didn't turn from watching the city burn.
"Some of us do it because we enjoy it. Some of us do it simply because we can. Some of us do it because this is our empire, and you do not deserve to live within it, enslaved to a lie."
The slaughter didn't cease when the sun rose. Some primitive, foolish part of the Archregent's hindbrain had hoped against hope that these creatures would vanish with the coming of the light.
"Do you have communication with the other cities?" Talos asked.
The Archregent gave a weak nod.
"But it is infrequent at best. The astropaths sometimes manage to communicate with other guild members in the other cities, but even that is rare enough."
"It is rare because they have no focus. I will deal with that. We have Mechanicum adepts among our crew. They will make planetfall and attend to your flawed equipment. We will then broadcast these images to the other cities, as a sign of what comes for them."
The Archregent's mouth was dry.
"You will give them time to organize resistance?"
There was no hiding the hope in his voice.
"Nothing on this world is capable of resisting us," answered Talos. "They are free to prepare however they wish."
"What is the Mechanicum?"
"You would know it by their slave name, the Adeptus Mechanicus."
Talos fairly spat the cult's imperial title.
"Sigh."
Sirion walked over, his eyes never leaving the burning city. He hungered to be down there, they all did, and it showed in the movement of every muscle.
"You are enjoying this," he said,
seeing no need to make it a question. Talos's nod was subtle enough to almost go unseen.
"It reminds me of the days before the Great Betrayal."
And that was true enough. In that age, in the farthest shadowed reaches of the Emperor's light, the Eighth Legion had slaughtered whole cities to inspire the other settlements across a given world into obedience of Imperial law.
"Peace through justice," Talos said,
"and justice through fear of punishment." "Aye, it reminds me of the same. But most of our brothers down there are doing it for the thrill of the hunt and the pleasure of slaughtering terrified mortals. Remember that before you graft a false layer of high ideals over what we do here."
"I am no longer so deluded," Talos admitted.
"I know what we are. But they do not need to share my ideals for my plan to work." "Will this work?" Sirion asked. "We are on the wrong side of the Imperium's border. They may never know what we do here."
"They will know," said Talos. "Trust me, they will hear this.
and come running.
Then my advice is this. We should not be here when they arrive. We are down to 4 claws, brother. After this, we have to return to the Eye and link up with whatever legion forces we can ally with there.
Talos nodded again, but said nothing.
Are you even listening to me? Sirion asked.
Just get me the astropaths.
They numbered 138 in total. The astropaths marched in as a disorderly pack, dressed in the same ragged clothing so typical of Sanctuary's citizens and the detritus cast of humanity found on frontier worlds across the Imperium's edges. Eurus, of the newly organized Second Claw, led them in. Blood marked his armor in dry splotches.
There was a struggle, he admitted. We tore our way into their guild shelter, and 7 of them died. The rest of them came without a fight.
A ragged conclave,
Talos noted, walking around the prisoners. An equal mix of men and women. Most of them were filthy. Several were children. Most interesting of all, none of them were blind.
Yet they still have their eyes, Eurus said, noting Talos's stare. Will they still be of use to us if they've not been soul-bound to the false Emperor's throne?
I believe so. They are not a true choir, and enslavement to the Golden Throne has not refined their power. In truth, they are barely worthy of the name astropaths. These are closer to telepaths, dabblers, witches, and weirds. But I can still make their powers work as we require.
We will return to the city, Eurus said.
As you will, my thanks, brother.
Good fortune, Talos. Ave Dominus Nox.
Second Claw left the chamber in a loose pack, no more organized than the prisoners they'd brought in. Talos faced the wretches, his targeting reticule flicking from face to face.
Who leads you? He asked.
One woman stepped forward, her ragged robe seeming no different to any of the others.
I do.
My name is Talos of the 8th Legion.
Confusion momentarily shone through the dullness of her eyes.
What is the 8th Legion?
Talos's black eyes burned. He inclined his head, as if she had somehow proved a point.
I am in no frame of mind to provide a lesson in history and myth, he said. So let us simply say that I am one of the original architects of the Imperium. I hold to its founding ideal, that the species must know peace through obedience. I aim to bring the Imperium back into these skies. A lesson was once learned on this world. I find an amusing poetry in using this world to teach a lesson in return.
What lesson?
She asked. Unlike many of the others, she showed little overt fear. On the cusp of middle age, she was likely at the height of her powers, not yet bled dry by them. Perhaps that was why she led them all. Talos didn't care either way.
Seal the doors.
He voxed to First Claw. Uzas, Sirion, Mercutian, and Varial moved to guard the chamber's 2 exits, their weapons clutched in loose fists.
Do you know of the warp?
He asked the leader.
We have stories, and the city's archives.
Allow me to guess. To you, the warp is the afterlife, a sunless underworld, where those disloyal to the Emperor are punished for their faithless ways.
This is what we believe, all the archives state.
I do not care how you have misinterpreted your records. You are the strongest of your guild, are you not?
I am.
Good.
Her head burst in a rupture of blood and bone. Talos lowered his bolter.
Close your eyes, he said.
All of you.
They didn't obey. The children drew close to their parents, and panicked murmurs broke out, as did intermittent weeping. The guild mistress's body hit the decking with a bony clang.
Close your eyes, Talos repeated. Commune with your power in whatever way works best. Reach out now and feel for the soul of your dead leader. All who can hear her spirit still shrieking in the air around us, step forward.
Three of them stepped forward, their eyes uncertain, their limbs quivering.
Only three? Talos asked. How very disappointing. I would hate to have to start shooting again.
Another dozen stepped forward. Another handful followed.
That is better. Tell me when she falls silent.
He waited in silence, watching the faces of those who claimed to hear their dead mistress. One woman in particular winced and cringed as if suffering tics. When all others claimed to hear her no longer, she only relaxed a full minute afterwards.
Now she is gone, she said, scratching her thin, lank hair. Thank the throne.
Talos drew his gladius, tossing it and catching it three times. As it smacked into his palm on the last catch, he turned and hurled it across the chamber. One of the men who'd stepped forward sank to the deck, gasping soundlessly, his eyes wide and his mouth working like a fish deprived of air. The sword impaling through his chest made a gentle tinny sound as it tapped on the deck with each spasm. At last, he lay still.
He was lying, Talos told the rest. I saw it in his eyes. He could not hear her, and I do not like being lied to.
The air around the crowded guilders was charged now, alive with overlapping tears of ripe tension.
The warp is nothing so mundane. Beneath what we see of the universe is a layer we do not. Through this unseen sea of souls, an infinity of demons swim. They are, even now, digesting the spirits of your murdered kin. The warp is not sentient. Neither is it malicious. It simply is. And it responds to human emotion. Most of all, it responds to suffering, to fear, to hatred. For in such moments, humanity is at its strongest and most honest. Suffering colors the warp. And the suffering of psychic souls is like a beacon. Your emperor uses that suffering as fuel for his golden throne to project the Astronomican.
Talos could see few of them followed his words. Ignorance stunted their intellects, and fear blinded them to the nuance of his explanation. This, too, he found grimly amusing, as his red eye lenses drifted from face to face.
I will use your suffering to breed a beacon of my own. The slaughter and torture of this city's people is merely the beginning. You can already feel the pain and death pressing against your minds. I know you can. Do not resist it. Let it saturate you. Listen to the screaming of souls as they dissolve from this realm into the next. Let their torment ripen within you. Carry it with you as an honor. For together you will become an instrument no different from your beloved distant emperor. You, like he, will become beacons in the endless night, bred from agony. To do that, I will break each one of you, slowly. So very slowly, so that madness breeds within the pain. I will take you up into our warship, and over the course of the coming weeks, I will have you crippled, flayed, excoriated, and excruciated. I will consign your ruined, pained forms, kept alive by our expert grace, to prison laboratories, where your only company will be the skinned carcasses of your children, your parents, and the corpses of others from your dead world. With the pain I give you, with your prolonged agonies, I will choke the warp at the Imperium's edge.
fleets will come to investigate, fearing nearby worlds may succumb to demonic intrusion. Mankind's empire will ignore Sagwalsa no longer, and will learn an old lesson. It is not enough to force criminals and sinners into exile. You must make an example of them, and crush them utterly. Leniency, mercy, trust, these are weaknesses that the Imperium must pay for. The Imperium should have destroyed us here when it had the chance. Let them learn that once more. Your lives are over, but in death you will achieve something almost divine. You have prayed for so long to leave this world. Be pleased, for I am granting you that wish. As he fell silent, he watched the dawn of horrified disbelief on their faces. They could scarcely imagine what he was saying, but no matter. They'd understand soon enough.
"Don't do this," came a voice from behind.
Talos turned to face the Archregent.
"No? Why should I not?"
The old man trailed off.
"Strange," Talos shook his head. "Your kind never has an answer to that question."